And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Command the children of Israel that they bring unto thee pure oil olive, beaten for the light, to cause the lamps to burn continually in the tabernacle of the congregation. And it shall be a statute forever in your generations.
The Eternal Light. The National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations make free time available to present The Eternal Light, a program which comes to you under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. Today's program, a segment of My Times, was adapted by Morton Wishengrad from Judge Joseph M. Proskauer's autobiography and is offered in observance of United Nations Week. Roger DeCoven is featured as Judge Proskauer, and Ross Martin is heard as Alfred E. Smith.
In the early spring of 1927, a telephone rang. It is now 23 years later, the autumn of 1950, but that telephone is still ringing. I am one American speaking to other Americans. My name is Joseph M. Proskauer. I'm a former justice of the Supreme Court of the state of New York. If age and public service confer any privileges upon a man, then perhaps I have the right to say to you, your telephone is ringing. You must answer it. In the early spring of 1927, the telephone rang for me. The voice, the other end, belonged to Belle Moskowitz, personal advisor to Governor Al Smith.
Joe, I know you're busy, but I'm at the Hotel Biltmore with the governor. Can you come right over?
I have an important conference ready to begin.
Cancel it.
You make it sound urgent.
It is urgent.
I'll be over in half an hour.
Make it 15 minutes. Joe, something has come up which is even more important than the presidency of the United States.
And so, in the early spring of 1927, I hurried to the side of Al Smith because he needed me. And as I hurried, I remembered how he had described himself to me at one of our earliest meetings.
When I was a boy, I worked in a fish market to support my mother and my sister. That's the only university I ever attended. You might go so far as to describe me as a graduate of the Fulton Fish Market.
He wore a brown derby. His voice was raucous. Perhaps he lacked the polish of the drawing room statesman. But I can attest that Al Smith was a real human being, whose moral fiber was rock. I had seen him tested in the years when he was a candidate for governor of New York, and I was his campaign manager. I remember how in 1924, when he finished a campaign speech, there was a stir at the edge of the crowd.
Al Smith! Look out there toward West Hill!
They're burning the cross!
It's the Ku Klux Klan!
There it was, on the horizon, the symbol of bigotry and intolerance. Al Smith studied the burning cross, and he lowered his head in shame. When he spoke, his voice was choked.
The Catholics of the country can stand it. The Jews can stand it. Our citizens born under foreign skies can stand it. But the United States of America cannot stand it.
He knew the techniques of the politician and the statesman, but he spurned their hypocrisy. When five legally elected socialist assemblymen were expelled from the state legislature, Al Smith was not afraid to speak out. Nor was he afraid to cause the repeal of the un-American Lusk laws.
The majority needs no protection. They can protect themselves. Law in a democracy means the protection of the rights and liberties of a minority.
He was down to earth. He spoke a language that all men could understand. And he had wisdom, the kind of wisdom that can never be taught in a school. I recall an evening he spent at my summer home in the Adirondacks when I brought up the Sacco Vanzetti case.
I don't know much about the case, Joe. I'm not qualified to discuss it. But I do know this much.
Yes?
If I were the governor of Massachusetts, and two men were condemned to death for a crime about which there's so much doubt, that I had to call in a college president and two judges to tell me what to do, I'd commute their sentence.
Al Smith. This is what he was like. And now, in the early spring of 1927, Belle Moskowitz had phoned that Al Smith needed me. And there was no mistaking the urgency in her voice.
You're late.
I know, Belle. I took a taxi.
Well, that explains it.
Where is he?
In the next room, but don't go in yet.
But I thought it was urgent. You said
I know what I said. Before you go in, read this.
What is it, an article?
An open letter to the Honorable Alfred E. Smith to be published in the May issue of the Atlantic Monthly. It's written by a lawyer who's described as an authority on canon law.
Is this the urgent business?
Don't be impatient. Read it. You'll find it erudite, scholarly, replete with learned quotations from the popes and the cardinals. But what it boils down to is that Al Smith is disqualified from being a candidate for president.
Disqualified?
So the letter suggests.
Why? For what reason?
Because Al Smith is a Catholic.
Belle, you mean for something like this you call me away from a busy office and a calendar full of appointments?
Joe Pascal, keep your temper. This letter can take Al Smith's candidacy and blast it to smithereens.
Who's going to pay attention to it?
Voters. Lots of voters. There's a challenge here. This lawyer says Al Smith cannot in good conscience take an oath as president because his religion is in conflict with the Constitution of the United States.
Look here, Belle. The world is full of misguided and cantankerous...
Misguided and cantankerous what? Joe, I'm trying to tell you this isn't something written by a crackpot. It's going to be published in one of America's most reputable journals. It makes every show of fairness. It's written in impeccable English. And it can destroy the career of a man we both love. Sit down and read it.
I had never seen her so agitated. And Belle Moskowitz was not a person easily agitated. She was the woman who had stood anonymously, quietly, modestly at the governor's side through four terms, asking nothing for herself. Asking only that laws be passed against child labor, that laws be passed defending the wage earner and the school child and the widowed and the orphaned. She was the social conscience of New York State. And now there were tears in her eyes. And so I sat down and I read the advance proofs of the open letter to Al Smith.
Well, Joe, did I exaggerate?
No. No, you didn't.
Al read it through twice. He's sick about it.
You ought to be drafting his reply.
He refuses.
What did you say?
He refuses to reply to it. Why do you think I called you? Look, someone has to talk to Al Smith. He's gone stubborn. Joe, you've got to convince the governor that he can't ignore this letter.
All right.
Come in. The door's open.
Joe.
Surprised to see me?
Yeah, a little. Belle called you.
I suppose you did. You're angry.
I don't like people meddling in my personal life. Not even friends. Not even my best friends.
Al, I'm afraid this isn't your personal life. This is your public life.
My religion is a private matter.
A candidate for the president has no privacy. I don't have to tell that to you.
My religion is nobody's business but my own.
And a few million voters. Come on, Al. Let's look at the record. Your phrase, isn't it? No Catholic's ever been president. No Catholic ever will. Until this thing is thrashed out. You've got to answer this letter.
I've got to do nothing of the sort.
The man who wrote it charges that your religion makes it impossible for you to take an honest oath as president of the United States.
The man who says so utters a damnable lie.
Say so.
It's beneath my dignity to say so.
You want to be president.
A respectable president. Joe, don't argue with me. That letter is a slander against every Catholic in America. I'm not going to dignify it with a reply. Now, let's not talk about it. I said I didn't want to talk about it anymore.
Come on, Al, come down from it. Can't you recognize a cup of coffee?
No.
Nice and hot.
I don't want a cup of coffee.
Suit yourself. Would you like a cup, Joe?
I would, very much.
Cream?
Please.
Sugar?
The usual. That's fine.
It's a lovely day, isn't it?
Certainly is. Gives me an itch to chuck everything and go fishing.
Certainly is a lovely day.
Oh, you two are so smart, so subtle, so sophisticated. You give me a pain in the neck. I said you give me a pain in the neck.
Sorry, Al.
I'm not going to answer that letter.
You're perfectly right.
No. Oh, you give me a pain in the neck.
You said that before, Governor.
What I can't get over is this man whom I never set eyes on in my whole life. But this man says I can't honestly take an oath of office. Where's he been? I've been taking an oath of office 19 times. I could murder the guy. What does he mean a Catholic can't honestly defend the Constitution? For one quarter of the entire history of the Supreme Court of the United States, it was presided over by Chief Justice Taney and Chief Justice White. They were Catholics. They defended the Constitution.
Who are you yelling at, Al?
I'm not yelling.
You're yelling.
I'm not yelling. Joe, you know, it's a laugh. In January, the first governor's cabinet that ever sat in New York got together up in Albany.
That's irrelevant.
What do you mean, irrelevant? I appointed them. Me. Two Catholics, 13 Protestants, and one Jew. I appointed as my closest assistant a Protestant who happens to be a Republican and a 32nd degree Mason. What are you two grinning about?
Nothing, just keep talking, Al.
Well, you can keep right on grinning because I'm not answering that open letter.
You just did, Governor.
What do you mean? Did I, Joe?
Uh-huh.
Joe, can I tell you the truth?
By all means.
I've read that open letter. I've read it several times. I don't know what it means.
Very simple. The writer quotes a formidable list of papal bulls, syllabi, and encyclicals going back to the Middle Ages.
And which I never heard of in all my life. I tell you both, I've been a devout Catholic all my life. That stuff he quotes hasn't got anything to do with being a Catholic.
Say so in your answer.
Oh, but I can't answer, Joe.
God, give me strength. You just did answer.
No, Belle. I'm out of my depth. I'm Al Smith, kid from the Fulton Fish Market. I'm not a theologian. I'm not a religious historian.
Still, that letter has to be answered. You owe it to yourself, to your party, to your religion. It must be answered.
You really believe that?
I really believe it.
Okay, you answer it.
Me?
Why not?
A Protestant lawyer challenges a Catholic candidate on an issue like this, and the challenge is answered by a Jewish judge.
No, Al. This is your baby.
Looks like I'm surrounded. All right, I'll answer it, Joe, provided you agree to help me.
Of course he'll help you. How could he refuse to help?
We agreed between us that to answer the points relating to Catholic doctrine, we would require the assistance of a priest.
Father Francis P. Duffy is the man. He holds a Distinguished Service Cross, the Distinguished Service Medal, the Ribbon of the Legion of Honor, and the Croix de Guerre. If anyone wants to question his patriotism, let him ask the 165th Regiment.
And so I met with Father Duffy. I spent some of the most memorable hours of my life with him.
Joe, this is amusing.
Well, I'm glad you're enjoying yourself, Father Duffy.
Every quotation in this open letter is taken out of context.
For instance?
Well, the writer quotes the Catholic Encyclopedia to the effect that my church, quote, regards dogmatic intolerance not alone as her incontestable right, but as her sacred duty, unquote. Now, what he leaves out is that only for Catholics does the Church recognize no deviation from complete acceptance of its dogma. And the very same article In another chapter of the encyclopedia says... Well, here, read it yourself. Mm-hmm. This is what was completely omitted.
Mm-hmm. The intolerant man is avoided as much as possible by every high-minded person. The man who is tolerant in every emergency is alone lovable.
Don't go away, Judge Proskauer. I've got lots more.
I spent considerable time on the rough outline of a reply. It wasn't my reply. It was Al Smith's. On a Sunday in April, I went to Albany to show the governor and Mrs. Moskowitz what Father Duffy and I had accomplished. Al liked what he read. He added his own phrases, wrote, rewrote. Then the three of us sat down for a rather happy lunch.
Joe, we've blown him to smithereens.
I'll have some of that salad.
He hasn't got a leg to stand on. We've cut the ground right out from under him. Pass the butter.
Yeah. Feeling good, Governor?
Fine. Just fine.
Yeah, we'll mail your answer off to the Atlantic Monthly. There's plenty of time to make the May issue.
I wouldn't send it, Bill.
Why wouldn't you? There's something wrong with it. I think it's good.
Maybe a little too good. Every thesis advanced against you has been exploded. But suppose in the process of explosion, Al, something has been put in inadvertently, which is offensive to Catholic dogma.
Yeah. Well, what do you suggest?
That we check it with Cardinal Hayes for points of doctrine.
Well, I don't think it's necessary. But then I don't think it can hurt any. All right, we'll let Cardinal Hayes look at it.
Judge Proskauer, I return to you the manuscript of the governor's reply. You will notice that the envelope has not been opened.
I'm afraid I don't understand. Have I offended you in any way, sir?
No, you have not.
Well, why the unopened envelope, then?
Judge, I'd give almost anything to see Al Smith president of the United States. Not because he's of my faith, but because I think he's qualified to be president.
Then why?
I can't take any part in a political campaign or give any advice on a political question. Judge, do I amuse you so much?
Yes, Your Eminence. It's very funny. In one sentence, you've just written a complete answer to the open letter.
Yes. I suppose I have, haven't I?
I persuaded Cardinal Hayes to read Al Smith's reply for its theology only, and so he finally read it.
Judge, you can say to the governor that this is good Catholicism and good Americanism.
I told the governor, and the letter was mailed to the Atlantic Monthly. Editor Ellery Sedgwick prefaced its publication with a foreword.
This is an historic incident. Historic for the country and for the church. Now, for the first time in the Republic's history, under a constitution which forever forbids religious tests as qualifications for office, a candidate for the presidency has been subjected to public questioning as to how he can give undivided allegiance to his country when the church restricts the freedom of his choice. And the candidate has answered. Answered not deviously and with indirection, but straightforwardly, bravely, with the clear ring of candor.
Dear Mr. Marshall, you seem to think that Catholics must be all alike in mind and in heart, as though they'd been poured into and taken out of the same mold. I think you've taken your thesis from the limbo of defunct controversies. I quote to you what Cardinal Gibbons has said.
American Catholics rejoice in our separation of church and state. I can conceive of no combination of circumstances likely to arise which would make a union desirable to either church or state. For ourselves, we thank God that we live in America, in this happy country of ours, to quote Theodore Roosevelt, where religion and liberty are natural allies.
Al Smith's letter of reply belongs with the American documents on religious freedom. It was written in the heat of a presidential campaign, but it contains truths which pertain to all campaigns, to all American generations.
In the wildest dreams of your imagination,
You cannot conjure up a possible conflict between religious principle and political duty in the United States. But if you can conjure up such a conflict, how would a Protestant resolve it? By the dictates of his conscience. That is exactly what a Catholic would do. As Cardinal Gibbons said of the unthinkable supposition that were the Pope to issue commands in purely civil matters,
he would be offending not only against civil society, but against God, and violating an authority as truly from God as his own. Any Catholic who clearly recognized this would not be bound to obey the Pope, or rather, his conscience would bind him absolutely to disobey.
I believe in absolute freedom of conscience for all men, and in equality of all churches, all sects, and all beliefs before the law, as a matter of right and not as a matter of favor. I believe in the absolute separation of church and state, and in the strict enforcement of the provisions of the Constitution, that Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. I believe that no tribunal of any church has any power to make any degree of any force in the law of the land other than to establish the status of its own communicants within its own church. I believe in the support of the public school as one of the cornerstones of American liberty. I believe in the right of every parent to choose whether his child shall be educated in the public school or in a religious school supported by those in his own faith. In this spirit, I join with fellow Americans of all creeds in a fervent prayer that never again in this land will any public servant be challenged because of the faith in which he has tried to walk humbly with his God.
The publication of Governor Smith's letter made a profound impression. He was nominated by his party to be its candidate for president. I was with him when he campaigned, with him during a whispering campaign of bigotry, almost unbelievable in its intensity. Al Smith was a good loser, but for the remainder of his life, he carried a hurt in his heart that his beloved America could be guilty of intolerance. The telephone is ringing. In 1927, the telephone rang for me. It is 1950. The same phone rings for you. Answer it, please. Say the word that has to be said. An American word.
If you would like a copy of today's script, please send your name and address with 10 cents to cover the cost of postage and handling to the Jewish Theological Seminary of America, 3080 Broadway, New York 27, New York. And now we take great pleasure in presenting Dr. John Slauson, Executive Vice President of the American Jewish Committee. Dr. Slauson.
The stirring dramatization we have just heard, based upon one portion of Judge Proskauer's autobiography, highlights this noted American's devotion to the cause of justice. Throughout his long and distinguished career, he has lashed out against bigotry and discrimination whenever and wherever he has found it. His strict code permits no truce, no compromise with narrow prejudice, which undermine the American way. In any record of this nation's constant striving towards greater freedom and opportunity for all its citizens, the name of Joseph M. Proskauer must certainly be prominently featured. It is a further measure of his social vision that his contributions to the cause of human freedom extend far beyond the boundaries of our country. Indeed, as the United Nations succeeds in its efforts to secure for all those basic human rights which we Americans have long enjoyed, millions of people in other hemispheres may well recognize Judge Proskauer as a moving spirit in their liberation. His untiring efforts at the time when the United Nations Charter was being drafted at San Francisco were largely responsible for the recognition of international human rights as a bulwark of peace. Joseph Proskauer has always understood that liberty is indivisible, that the rights and freedoms of our own people in this, the freest nation in the world, are intimately tied to the rights and freedoms of people everywhere. As a consultant to the American delegation, he was one of the guiding spirits in the creation of the United Nations Commission on Human Rights. He was then president of the American Jewish Committee. And together with his colleague, now president of this organization, and representatives of other religious, educational, and civic groups, the judge urged that an international bill of human rights be recognized as a major goal of the UN. Professor James T. Shotwell, the noted historian and educator and former president of the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace, has written of Judge Proskauer's personal plea to the Secretary of State during a crucial moment when the charter was being drafted. The judge, he declared, made the most eloquent and convincing argument that I have ever listened to in my life. His argument on that occasion is destined to become one of the chapters of American history. I, as a historian, with all the careful reserves that a historian is bound to think of, concluded Dr. Shotwell, pay this tribute to the leader of the American Jewish Committee. It was a magnificent victory for freedom and human rights. Those are the words of Professor Shotwell. At this time, the entire nation celebrates United Nations Week, honoring both the organization that represents the hope and future of the civilized world and the men and women of all nations, races, religions, and backgrounds who have helped build the UN. I know that it is Judge Proskauer's greatest pride to be counted among these outstanding architects of world peace.
Thank you, Dr. Slauson. Our Eternal Eye Drama today, a segment of My Times, was adapted by Morton Wishengrad from the autobiography of the same title by Judge Joseph M. Proskauer. The music was composed by Morris Momorsky and conducted by Milton Katims. Cantor Robert Siegel sang the liturgical introduction. Roger DeCoven appeared as Judge Proskauer, and Ross Martin was heard as Governor Smith. The production was under the direction of Edward King. This is Mel Brandt speaking. Free time to present the Eternal Light is made available by the National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations. This weekly program is presented under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.